WAER Sports proudly presents the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
At the 30, at the 20, cuts towards the middle, and Nykeem Johnson takes it home for a Syracuse touchdown.
The Orange going quick. Bounce pass, Jimmy Boeheim, baseline drive, and jam!
Going through all the good.
To the midline, it's bobbled, and Syracuse wins!
A winding shot by Trimboli, 10 yards out, shoots, he scores!
And all the bad.
Syracuse, bowl ineligible for the third straight year.
They made it into the NCAA tournament as a number 11 seed, but it is over as Houston moves on to the Elite Eight.
And now, here are your hosts, Johnny Gadamowitz and Ethan Frank.
Well, the gang is back together. Johnny Gadamowitz, Ethan Frank, Jordan Letter. Sorry, you've got all three of us today. And guys, I wish we were meeting under brighter circumstances. It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast, as always. Syracuse men's basketball drops what was just an absolute heartbreaker in really what you thought was a must-have game, in a game that it was looking like Syracuse did everything it can to secure the victory. But down the home stretch, a couple of missed free throws later, it is indeed UNC that squeaks out the win. Now we'll officially welcome you on into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast with Ethan Frank and Jordan Leonard. I'm Johnny Gadamowitz. Guys, how we doing? How we feeling after a loss like that, a tough pill to swallow?
It was tough, Johnny. As someone who was in the building, thank you, Jordan. It was tough. When you think about this game, this is the second time Syracuse has had a chance to win and have a meaning. It would have been the best win of their season. It would have been the best win of their season against Miami had they beaten Miami, another game that Johnny just happened to be at over a week ago. But you look at what happened in this game, and I mean, to put it lightly, Jesse Edwards was treated like a rag doll by Armando Bacot, and it was a guards game for Syracuse. It was a perimeter-oriented game. Gerard Mintz Bell are your leading scorers. A really nice performance from Chris Bell. You're not going to believe this, guys. Not one, not two, not three, but four rebounds, including an offensive rebound putback layup. Didn't think I'd live to see the day to see that, but he played really well. Judah goes 7 for 18. He was a little out of control, only 2 assists to 3 turnovers. You don't like that. But Joe was the gas that made this engine of a team go, and he played really well in the first half. And in the second half, Leaky Black played really, really good defense on him. So that's when Judah started to take over. It's when Bell started to heat up from behind the arc, and Edwards made a couple of shots. But you look all around, not a lot of other scoring. Benny scores 4 points. Malik Brown with 2 on a putback layup. Saimir and Munir both with 2. And Justin Taylor scores no points in only 3 minutes. You're not going to believe this. Hold on 1 second. Justin Taylor with a 3 trillion last night. Wow. I didn't think I'd see the day that a Syracuse player would have a trillion, but a 3 trillion. Now that is rare. No statistics except minutes for Justin Taylor. I might have to tweet that out. That's pretty incredible. Before I continue on, guys, any thoughts on the 3 trillion? Because that is just an incredible feat.
That's impressive. I don't know if I've ever even realized that could actually happen.
Have you not heard of Club Trillion by Mark Titus? He was walk-on at Ohio State. He's now a podcaster, but he invented it because he was walk-on, called Club Trillion. So Justin Taylor, welcome. I am going to officially induct you to Club Children.
We should have
Trillion.
We should have a ceremony for him.
All right, maybe on the back half or next week, we'll have a ceremony for Justin Taylor to induct him to Club Trillion. But the overall takeaway from this game is, once again, it was there for the taking. And this is, once again, just a young team learning on the fly, but they're not ready yet to win these type of games. It's going to take a little more time. Will that time be February? Will it be March? Will it be November? I don't know, but they are still learning. But the encouraging thing is they are learning every game and clearly getting better to the point where they can compete with the likes of North Carolina.
No, I think Ethan, you provided it pretty eloquently there. I mean, they had the game within the grasp. I think the most problem that I had with Syracuse, obviously Jesse Edward getting into foul trouble when you're playing Armando Bacot, one of the best centers in the ACC, is not very ideal. But specifically for Judah Mintz, he went 7 of 18, but he was trying to seek contact almost every time he drove the ball down into the lane. I mean, Judah, you can make those shots. You don't need to seek contact. You don't need to seek getting a fouls. And he clearly didn't, because Syracuse only had 3 free throw attempts and North Carolina had 23. I think that's a stat that a lot of people are kind of putting off to the side, that Syracuse playing the zone gave up 23 free throw attempts and they only got 3, 14 made for North Carolina, only 2 for Syracuse. When you lose a game by 4, that plays a huge role in that aspect of it. And obviously Jesse Owens getting into foul trouble, also not very good. I think one interesting thing that Jim Boeheim could have possibly played with, I know you're playing Armando Bacot, but could have possibly played Malik Brown at the 5 a little bit more. I know Munir Hima gives you the size, but if you play Malik Brown at the 5, you could have gone small. Maybe it would have spaced the floor a little bit better to get Joe Girard some more open shots, get Chris Bell open shots, which he did hit in the second half. So I think that's where he could have played with it a little bit, but obviously a heartbreaking loss. And I think the free throw has had a lot to do with it more than some other aspects of the game.
Jordan, I couldn't agree more. I mean, for me, the two overarching takeaways from a statistics standpoint for Syracuse is that the Orange out-rebounded UNC and had a significantly higher field goal percentage on the day than UNC, yet they still managed to lose the game. Well, how was that? Well, because of free throws, as you mentioned too, Jordan. A really frustrating game. I think you guys sort of encapsulated it pretty well. Very well, to be perfectly honest with you. I think, you know, when you go up against these teams that have that sort of high post guy like Pete Nance was, and you've got the dynamic guards where you can get things going between them up top, and then you find that soft spot in the zone in the middle, and then you add the ferociousness of Bacot down low, I think it was just a little too much for Syracuse to keep up with from a defensive standpoint. I think this is a UNC team that probably was a little bit more athletic than SU on the court last night. I don't know.
Probably. That's something. Probably.
Yeah, definitely.
I would say definitely. I would say definitely. Yeah.
But the reason I say probably is because I don't think that's something that the Cuse have had to deal with a whole lot this year. Like, I think more often than not, you know, the conversation, of course, this year is how much more athletic Syracuse is this year than last year. I think most nights when SU goes out there, they do have the advantage in the athleticism department. And I think last night is what happens when you find out that they don't.
I think it was I think it was the fourth time this season that Syracuse has just been outclassed in terms of athletes and in terms of talent. And that would be definitely, I noticed it at the St. John's game that we were at in Brooklyn, Johnny. Illinois, right. I mean, you were completely outclassed in all aspects. The Virginia game and then on Tuesday night against North Carolina would be the four games that come to mind. Against Miami, I mean, yes, I think Miami's athletes were better, but I don't think they're that much more skilled. So you can kind of maybe give them a half for that, but I think those are the main four that come to mind.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Virginia, yeah, I guess Virginia, I would agree with you. What I want to talk about here and what's interesting is now, you know, this is the second time in a little over a week where it has indeed been Judah getting the last shot. You know, for whether or not the play was drawn up for him or not, I personally think is irrelevant because it was him that took the last shot, not once but twice. Against Carolina this week, against Miami last week. Where are we at as far as sort of the faith in Mintz to be that closer and him now obviously being 0-for-2? How are we reading the room as far as that late game situation management is concerned?
I think you have to look at it in a couple different ways. Against Miami, he was out of control. And while yes, on Tuesday against North Carolina, he was also out of control. Him going to the basket that quickly was the right decision. He had a one-on-one matchup. And two, you're only down by 1 point. So worst case scenario, you miss, you lose the ball, you can still foul and only be down 3. Against Miami, you were down 2. So not scoring effectively ends the game barring a missed free throw. North Carolina, there was still a chance. I mean, we could debate the blocker charge call. I think we can all agree, what is he supposed to do? Calling that a flagrant foul is ridiculous. And Jim Boeheim said it to the ref. You could read his lips. He said, why don't you just end the game, basically. And that was what that flagrant foul did, was effectively end the basketball game. But I still have full confidence in Judah to take the last shot because there is no one on even close to his level of getting by a defender and getting towards the basket where he can draw a foul. And the refs decided not to give him any calls in the lane last night, calling a lot of offensive fouls, some warranted, but I thought Judah deserved a little more love from the officials when he was taking the ball to the basket and getting feet in the paint, going up against bigger guys compared to Syracuse's end. Jerry McNamara said today on ESPN Syracuse that he thought that Syracuse's big guys did a great job going vertical and going straight up when contesting shots, and North Carolina got rewarded with free throws, and they did miss a lot of free throws, but it seemed like the calls did not go both ways last night, and I think that's what McNamara was referencing. But I still have full confidence in Judah to take a last shot because he is better at getting to the basket than anyone else.
Yeah, I think speaking on the flagrant foul, I mean, it was a basketball move. It was a Euro step. And the defender was arguably pretty close to being inside his cylinder, so I don't think it was a flagrant foul. And to take the ball, pretty much the game out of Syracuse's hands, was just kind of bogus, honestly. But I think in terms of last shot, you have to give Judah Mintz the ball. He's the best playmaker on the team. He's the one that can create his own shot and still dish out to other people to get them wide open as well. And I think Francesco Simone, WAR guy, said it perfectly on the double overtime last night, is this team this year is about development. You have six freshmen, you have two in the starting lineup. It's about developing the team because of the youth on the roster. So giving Judah chances time in and time out to get that experience in late game stretches will only benefit Syracuse later in the season and into next year as well. So I think just the combination of Judah's athleticism and playmaking ability, and also realizing that this year is kind of a developing year for Syracuse, even if fans don't want to acknowledge it, I think that's why you have to give Judah the last shot and still have confidence in Judah getting the last shot.
Judah with 17, Joe Girard with 18, Chris Bell 15 on 3 of 5 from range. Those are the three SU players in double figures on the night against Carolina, but it did end up being too little, too late, as the Cues fall 72-68 on home court, and UNC pushes their three-game win streak to 4. The good news for Syracuse fans, though, is that there are two more prime opportunities for some big-time wins against two teams that you've already seen already, both from the state of Virginia. First up, it is the Hokies in Plattsburgh this weekend, SU and VaTech, coming up on Saturday. And for a little more on that matchup, we sat down and caught up with Zach Mackey, the Virginia Tech Director of Broadcasting. Continuing right along here on the Ostrom Avenue podcast, Johnny Gadamowicz, Ethan Frank, Jordan Leonard, joined today by Zach Mackey, the Virginia Tech Director of Broadcasting, coming on to help us preview the Orange and the Hokies coming up this weekend from Castle Coliseum in Blacksburg, Virginia. Zach, how's it going today? Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Appreciate you having me on. It's going good. I was just telling you, it's a lot easier traveling with these teams and being around these teams when they get a win than a whole bunch of losses. We had 7 in a row, so I got good practice with that. And it's nice to get back on the winner's side here for the first time in a while.
Well, the Hokies certainly have taken a turn for the better as of recently. Second January matchup between SU and VaTech. And the last time these two went toe-to-toe, it was a 10-point Syracuse win where the Hokies really struggled from beyond the arc, just 3 of 19 from long range. I guess to start out, Zach, my question is, installment number 2 here, if it's going to go differently for Virginia Tech this weekend against the Orange, is it just as simple as them knocking down more looks?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a lot of it. Obviously, with that defense and the way that that zone plays, you're going to have to be able to make shots. You knew that kind of going in against Syracuse a couple of weeks back, and ultimately the shots didn't fall. They didn't go, so it muddied up the paint a little bit. I think, too, that Justin Muntz is going to have a big game. A lot of that offense at the free throw line kind of flows through him. He's going to have to be able to find the open man. He's going to have to be able to open up that zone. But at the end of the day, you've got Hunter Couture back. That's going to be a good get for Virginia Tech. He's one of their best 3-point shooters on the team. So having him back opens that defense a little bit more so. But you know, you guys have done this too, where you've seen, you know, it's hard to explain. Sometimes the shots fall, sometimes they don't. You came out against Duke red hot, hit just about everything they saw, after only being able to put up 50 points in the game against Clemson on Saturday. So it's been a wave of a season. It's been a wave of shooting overall. And at the end of the day, in any game, and especially in a game where they're playing the 2-3 zone and playing the way that Syracuse does, you're going to have to be able to make shots.
Taking a little big picture, can you give us a one sentence kind of summary of Virginia Tech's season to this point? I know you said wave there, but if you could expand on that a little bit, what has caused this wave of a season, and how have things changed since these two teams last played?
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a good question. One sentence. I'm trying to think back because you know it started thinking that like. They started the year 11-1. Things were rolling. It wasn't so much of if they were in the NCAA tournament. It was, are they going to be a four, as high as a four seed? Maybe could they, you know, fall down to maybe a 7 or 8? Who knows how the ACC is going to fall? And now it's kind of fallen into the spot where you really better start winning some games in a row if you want to have a shot at an at-large bid here down the stretch. Injuries have played a part in that, I think. But I mean, hey, everyone's going to have injuries down the stretch. That's the way it goes. If I had to say it, I would say the highs have been high, the lows have been low, with injuries mixed in between, something like that. Because there have been, you know, there was a time when Virginia Tech, I mean, until Monday, hadn't won a game in over a month, a month and a half, hadn't won a basketball game, and you know, that's a hard pill to be able to swallow throughout the course of a basketball season. So it's just. It's been a year unlike any other this is my first year at Virginia Tech, but of the teams I've covered in the past and been around and done, I've never seen anything quite like this.
You mentioned the 7 losses in a row, kind of coinciding with Hunter Couture's injuries. Virginia Tech only really lost those by an average of margin of 5 points. How kind of did Hunter Couture being out of the game affect Virginia Tech when they're trying to close out contests down the stretch?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that he's the best defender. He's the best defender. He's going to be guarding the best offensive showing on the other side. So that's a big part of it. Another big part of it is that he's got the ability to be able to stretch that defense a little bit because he does make those shots. That was key because it was getting really muddy down inside. I thought there was just too much inside the paint. It was hard for those guys to be able to score in the paint. We were the last couple of weeks getting outscored in the paint by a lot. And a lot of that was because they were able to post up some guys down inside. So he's been able to open that. I think the ball moves really well with him. He's a couple of dribbles, maybe just a catch and pass. The ball gets around in a hurry. So I know you mentioned, you know, it came down to a lot of final couple of shots. I just got done, earlier today doing a podcast with one of our assistant coaches. And like, literally, if you can think of 4 shots, the 2 Syracuse games, the for Virginia Tech, the Boston College game, and the Wake Forest game all came down to the final shot. The other team hit the final shot and Virginia Tech lost the game. I mean, it's a totally different situation. We're sitting here if those 4 shots didn't fall. And so, you know, they still were competitive, but the only game so far up to that point that I felt like Virginia Tech just wasn't really in the game at all was really the Syracuse one. I thought Syracuse had complete control of that basketball game when we went up there a couple of weeks ago, and from start to finish just really felt like Virginia Tech never had enough to get into the game, really get it going. It was always kind of the Orange who just had control of that. The same was kind of against Virginia a week ago. Or so I kind of felt that same way. But so that's where I'm interested to see this matchup that is going to be coming up here on Saturday against Syracuse, how that matches up with Hunter Couture, how much he changes things. And then Virginia Tech could use the home crowd a little bit, get something, because like I said, they just didn't feel like as much in control of that game on the road at all at any point. It really was all Syracuse.
Jordan brought up sort of, you know, the nature of just how close some of these recent games have been and you elaborating on that. And that was kind of the case against Duke as well when the Hokies did get back in the win column. A 78-75 win, game in which they led by 7 at the half. Duke hung around and Vatek obviously pulls it out. But what can you point to in that Duke game from an X's and O's, from a tangible standpoint, that led to the result being different this time around?
So, you know, I think the biggest difference in that game was that Virginia Tech was able to really, they were able to match up offensive rebounding right away, because Duke's one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the country. Overall rebounding, they're the only team in the country that's in the top 10 for both categories. Virginia Tech got out rebounded, but it was only by three. They had been getting out rebounded by a little bit more. I mean, it helps whenever you shoot 54% from three, as opposed to like 18% from three against Clemson. And again, that's just something I can't pinpoint it as. I mean, I think Clemson was playing good defense, but Duke's got some players, as you guys know. Filipowski is, I think, is as good of a freshman I've seen this year so far. I mean, I know the kid at Alabama is really good too, but we haven't played them or won't see them this year in the regular season. But you know, being able to slow him down a little bit, maybe, you know, he got two early fouls and he still ended with 26. He was phenomenal in the ball game, was a little bit of a key. Jalen Roach was not much of a factor because of Hunter Couture's lockdown defense. That's something that, you know, obviously during that stretch when they were losing, they were having a hard time at being able to match up with the best offensive player on the other side. They were able to do that against Roach. Now I know that he's coming off injury too, so he's not quite to 100%. That might have played a part of it too. But at the end of the day, Virginia Tech went at one point, I think, like 6 for 8 from three. And, you know, you keep doing that, you keep making shots like that, at the end of the day, it's going to be hard for anybody to be able to play defense on you.
You mentioned Couture's defense on Roach Tuesday night. Syracuse's leading scorer, Joe Girard, was being defended by Leaky Black for most of the game. And I'd say that's a pretty big size advantage in the direction of North Carolina. Can you envision Couture guarding Joe Girard on Saturday with the success that Girard has had scoring the basketball this season and him being as effective defending him as he was Jeremy Roach?
Wow. I mean, I'm sure the coaching staff's open so that he can be as, you know, effective. I mean, Girard's been he was good up there in Syracuse. He's been good all season. What a finish to that game too. I was watching it last night. Like that game had a little bit of everything in it. You know, at the end of the game, I mean, Syracuse had that game won, I thought. And then all of a sudden, the way that that ball tipped on the baseline, that's a killer right on up and in for Phil Nance. But yeah, you know, I mean, I think you're gonna have to they a lot of times will put Sean Padula on the guy that's bringing the basketball down. So I'll be interested to see how they handle with Girard and with that, how they want to exactly match up with that. The interesting part too, guys, is that for the first time this season against Duke, Coach Mike Young went with the big lineup and he put Lynn Kidd, who got just his second start of the year, he put him in at the five. He moved Grant Bazilli, who's typically been playing the five, he moved him to a four, and then he moved Justin Mutz to a three, and they went with Couture and Padula. That was a lot of a different lineup, and that was because Duke can throw, I'm pretty sure they have five guys on their roster at 7 foot or above, so they've got a lot of size that they can throw out there. They were trying to counter some of that. And it was effective. It was good. Lynn Kidd's been really good down inside. I'll be interested to see not only how the matchups go, but if they decide to stay with that big lineup after having success on Monday night, or if they go back and put another guard who's typically been Darius Maddox or the freshman MJ Collins starting the other guard spot, move everyone down a little bit. I think that will be interesting to see how that goes about too.
You mentioned the name Sean Padula. He averaged just 5 points per game as a freshman. Now, I'm pretty sure leading the Hokies with 16. What kind of has been his development from year one to year two on the offensive side of the ball?
Well, I think the big part of it is that he's not afraid to drive it into the rack. He's been doing that. I mean, he's at right at probably 6 foot, and he'll drive into the rack. He's a good finisher near the rim, which a lot of times I think those point guards struggle sometimes to be finishers down inside for first layups. He can do just about everything in there. He's been able to shoot the three effectively enough that they've got to continue to guard him out there, and he's made quite a bit of three-pointers. I think he plays with so much confidence now, knowing that he's the guy. He's running point. He's bringing the basketball down. One thing that during that stretch, especially of the seven-game streak, a losing streak, that Coach Young said is right now Padula's playing too many minutes. I mean, he was playing complete games. The last three games, he played the complete 40 minutes before Duke. Never came out of the ball game. And as a point guard, bringing the ball down, especially one that you're expecting to score, it's just too many minutes. He's got to be able to sit down and get down a little bit. That's what Hunter coming back has been able to do too. I think it's taken some of the stress off Sean's shoulders. He can focus a little bit more as a scorer too. He won't always bring the ball down, but he's really embraced his role that he's in now. I mean, when you look at guards in the country, I think he's in the top four for most production shift from last year to this year, where, like you said, he was averaging five, he's up to 16. I know he's number one in power five going from last year to this year in terms of point production. So he's just taken a new role. He's taken it right away. There were so many questions about how that point guard position was going to go. And like I said, he makes things happen, but he's not afraid to drive to the hoop and get his shots too.
I want to hit on Mutz for a sec because he had the 21 against Syracuse a few games ago, obviously, but in the three since then, it only had double figures once. And when he did, it was 10 points. So what has sort of contributed to a little bit of his drop off, at least from a scoring standpoint?
Well, I thought against Clemson, he was kind of challenged and kind of bullied around a little bit. I thought that it wasn't the best we've seen out of Justin Mutz there at Clemson. He just, you know, didn't feel like he was getting in a groove. The big thing that Coach Young has said is he said, Justin, you've got to be selfish sometimes. He's got three less assists than Sean Padula, the point guard. So that should tell you, I mean, if you guys have seen that game, you know, against Virginia Tech a couple of weeks ago, he's constantly moving the basketball around. It makes the guys stay on their toes because he's such an assist getter. He's so good at moving the basketball around. And when he's doing that, I think that sometimes he forgets, or, you know, he's looking where the open guy is. He's getting double teamed a lot, that he's moving the basketball. Coach Young has said, hey, you got to get your own shots up too. You got to make sure you're too good of a scorer to always be throwing the basketball away. Even against Duke, I think in the first half, he had eight assists out of the get go, and he ended about at that. Then in the second half, he started scoring a little bit more. But it's interesting because, you know, sometimes it gets difficult, I think, to be able to do both, where you're constantly thinking about who's open. He's good at helping his teammates, finding the open man. But with that, then sometimes the scoring goes down, and they've challenged him to try to continue to focus on that scoring.
What would you say is the biggest weakness of Virginia Tech at this point in the season that Syracuse can take advantage of? I know it's only been a couple of weeks since these two teams played, but over the past few games, is there something you've noticed as Virginia Tech has rounded into form and now finally picking up a win on Monday, that there is still something that opponents can take advantage of with this team?
Well, you know, I think one of the biggest things is that if you're not able to score the basketball with Padula and Hunter Couture, it really shrinks the court. It makes it really small. It makes it hard on the guys inside. Right now, they haven't been getting great production out of Darius Maddox, who made the game-winning shot of the ACC tournament to get them on a chance to win the tournament last year. He's, you know, in a junior role. He's at some points he's been really streaky. That's been tough. So then MJ Collins is coming along as a freshman. He made the game-winning shot against Duke to go up by two, and then ultimately won the ball game. But that being said, he hasn't always been a scorer all year long. Look at his score. So if Couture and Padula are struggling to be able to shoot the three and make the three, it makes it very tough. And a lot of the workload goes down on Grant Pazilli and Justin Mutz to be able to get the job done. So I just think being able to get those different guys to step up, being able to get the depth, the bench production has been kind of a little bit lower than maybe where they would want exactly. So, you know, that's a big part of it, in my opinion, is if those guys aren't on, can somebody else step up and continue to make shots?
I guess one thing that I would ask is, because Joe Girard got 24 points, you mentioned Hunter Couture is probably going to guard him most of the time against Virginia Tech this time. Is there another player that you think Virginia Tech, other than Joe Girard, has to eliminate in this game again on Saturday?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I just think that, you know, the way that Syracuse plays, you know, they play with, you know, such a good togetherness. I know we talked about that after the game a couple of weeks ago. Me and my broadcast partner, Mike Burnett, were talking about the way that they move the basketball, and that they're able to get so many different guys involved, and they're able to to move the basketball really well, that you're going to have to be conscious of all those guys out there and what you're going to be able to do. I know in that game, like you said, Gerard had his 24. Jesse Edwards was really good in the game, I thought, too. I mean, he provided 9 rebounds down inside. So not only are you going to have to be able to get that job done, because Tech did get out-rebounded on both the offensive and defensive end, it's kind of like, what are you going to be able to do down inside to be able to stop a guy like Jesse Edwards, who's been good? Malik Brown hauled in a whole bunch of rebounds too. So they're just able to spread it so many times. I know, looking back, as I just quickly glanced at that box score, there was like, you know, 5 or 6 guys that were able to get into double figures in that game. I believe it was 5. And then Gerard got his. So you're obviously going to have to be able to stop him. But Jesse Edwards too, those 9 rebounds to go along with 13 points, almost a double-double. I mean, he's been a force all season long. And he's going to be a big guy to have to be able to stop, too.
Well, as we get set for the matchup this Saturday in Blacksburg between SU and Virginia Tech, Zach, what's the thing that you'll be kind of keying in on the most that you think could be the determining factor as to which way this one swings come Saturday?
You know, I think out of the get-go, when Virginia Tech's been good, they've played with a looseness. They've been able to get an early lead in the first half, just kind of, you know, get themselves into the ball game, get comfortable, especially in a game like this where they're going to have to be able to make shots. It's going to be limited possessions, just the way that these games are, and you're going to have to be able to make shots early. So I'll be looking out of the get-go if Tech is willing to get some shots, get some open shots. I'm talking especially 2 from 3, and, you know, be able to open the court a little bit more so right out of the get-go. I mean, Virginia Tech in the game last time was 15% from 3. They went 1 of 10 in the second half after going 2 of 9, not much better in the first half. So I think that's going to be a big part of it, is how do they shoot the ball from 3 and, you know, ultimately get it to go through, because statistics tell you that is an uncharacteristic game from 3. So can they improve upon that, or is that just simply the Syracuse defense that Tech's having a hard time with?
Well, we're certainly looking forward to it as both the Orange and Hokies try to vie for some ACC positioning as they close out the month of January. Syracuse and Virginia Tech coming up this weekend. That's Zach Mackey, Virginia Tech Director of Broadcasting. Zach, thanks again for the time today. Really appreciate it.
No problem, guys. Looking forward to the game on Saturday.
Thanks again to Zach for coming on. Guys, SU, Virginia Tech this weekend. Zach just caught us up on everything we need to know in Hokies world. A really intriguing matchup, and one that obviously Syracuse has already seen this year, a 10-point win on home court. For what it's worth, Virginia Tech hasn't won a game on the road, but luckily for Hokie fans, this game comes from Castle Coliseum, not from the JMA Wireless Dome. So SU, back on the road, continues what has kind of been this grueling January that I know we were discussing earlier in the month. But it is indeed coming towards a close. But guys, you get the sense that it's not quite panic button time. But Ethan, as you so eloquently said off the air before we recorded, you're running out of opportunities to grab some big time wins. And this Saturday in Blacksburg figures to be one of those.
Well, anytime you call me eloquent, Johnny, then that means I must have done something right. So thank you. But I said on this podcast 2 weeks ago that the 5-game stretch to end January, Miami, Georgia Tech, North Carolina, Virginia Tech, Virginia, you needed to go 2-3 at worst, and you're already 1-2. So you have, I don't know if you can afford one more loss. You probably need to win both of these games. But for the optimist in me says, if you go 1-1, there is still a glimmer of hope. So Virginia Tech, I would say, is probably more winnable. But Blacksburg is a very difficult place to play. We just heard Zach talk about now this team has some momentum after a win against Duke. I mean, anytime you beat Duke, no matter how good the Duke team is, it is a good feeling, and that is what Virginia Tech is feeling right now. So this is going to be a tough game for Syracuse on Saturday. It's going to be a tough game for Syracuse on Monday. Virginia is ranked now 7th in the country. So in all likelihood, you have a top 10 team coming into the Dome on Monday. And I know this team can win any game at home. I I don't care who they're playing. Syracuse will be in any game at home. You could lose to any team at home. We've seen that. But I also think there's a chance that they can beat any team at home. So I'm not going to rule it out, but it's going to be tough because Virginia just plays so well to what Syracuse is good at that it takes away a lot of the Orange's strengths, especially on the offensive end because of how good Tony Bennett's defense is. But, I mean, you look at the February schedule, BC, Florida State, that does you nothing. NC State's a decent team. Like, it doesn't really – Duke's unranked. They're not very good. Probably still in the tournament, but they're not very, very good. Then you get at Clemson, at Pitt. Those are two bubble teams, could make a big difference. And then Georgia Tech, we just saw, no comment. And Wake to end the year, Wake's meh as well. So the opportunities are running out, and that's just a long way of saying that.
Yeah, the opportunities are obviously running out. I'm on record of saying that Syracuse, starting with Georgia Tech, needed to go 2-2, so I'll stay with that. I think they need to win at least one of the next two, Virginia Tech, Virginia, to at least be on the bubble. Otherwise, you're not really even on the bubble because they don't really have many quad one. I don't even know if they have a quad one win. They might have one or two quad two wins. But Syracuse just needs to focus on one game at a time. Obviously, you head back down to Virginia Tech. You've beaten them before. They get Hunter Couture back, so it's a kind of a different matchup now. You always struggle against Virginia, but it's at home, big Monday. So they just got to figure out how to win one game at a time and close out these games down the stretch because they've had so many opportunities. They were at Miami. They were at North Carolina. Those were both resume-building wins, but they couldn't get it done down the stretch. So they just need to figure out a way to get it done because Boston College, as Ethan said, Boston College and Florida State aren't going to really do you anything. I think Duke is still an impressive win, no matter what kind of Duke team it is, just because of the pedigree. But the ACC is not as good this year. So you have to rack up wins, a lot of wins down the stretch to really put yourself on even on that bubble conversation.
You mentioned the quads, Jordan, before you go ahead, Johnny. Syracuse, 0-3 in quad one, 1-3 in quad two, 4-1 in quad three, and 8-1 in quad four. So you have both a quad three and a quad four loss right now. That's bad. There's no way to sugarcoat it. That's not good considering you only have one quad two win and no quad one wins.
Just reflective of the nature of kind of what this team is this year. You mentioned how young it is, the development, and unfortunately the results are something that have kind of gotten lost in the shuffle with all of that development. Something I'm going to be keying in on as far as this weekend is concerned, because obviously Virginia is a Monday game, so the next time we all chat will likely be post-Virginia. Last time the Orange played UVA, the Cavaliers had 22 assists on 23 made field goals. They just picked apart that Syracuse zone. I'm interested to see what sort of adjustments, if any, the Syracuse defense will make, or if it's just going to be more of the same. And, you know, Jim Boeheim and Tony Bennett each kind of sticking to their guns and let the chips fall where they may. But two really, really intriguing games. Again, two games that sound familiar based on the way the last month has gone down. But Syracuse in dire need of victories. And the next chance to do that comes this Saturday in Blacksburg against Virginia Tech. As always, WAER has you covered. It's a 7 p.m. tip Saturday night from Castle Coliseum. That means McClurg team countdown to tip-off comes your way on 88.3 and WAER.org at 6:30. That'll just about wrap things up for this edition of the Ostrom Avenue podcast after a heartbreaking loss to Carolina. SU Men's Hoops now sets its sights on the Hokies this weekend. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to leave us a like, leave us a follow, leave us a retweet, whatever it is. You can check us out on Twitter for all in-game coverage as well at Ostrom Avenue Pod. With Ethan Frank and Jordan Leonard, I'm Johnny Gadamowicz saying so long. Enjoy the hoop this weekend, and we'll catch up again next week.